This drink, I like it.
I know, it's great, right?
Another!
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of Film on Tap, where we've got the tap that never runs out. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Nancy Nandres. And today is a special Wicked-themed episode. That's right, we are breaking down Wicked for good, and we're also talking about a couple exciting new trailers. But before we dive into anything, I feel bad for people who are not watching this episode, because Andres is wearing not only a tiara, but he is also holding a star wand, and also he has what did you call this thing that you're wearing on your neck?
It's a cape, but it's a cape made for a dog. All right.
So I mean, if that doesn't make you want to tune in to the video episode, I don't know what will, frankly. But how are you today, Andre?
I'm doing quite well, guys. Right before we all got on, just watched Late Night with the Devil. So that is very interesting pre-programming before before talking about Wicked.
That's completely two different vibes, I feel like.
I know, right?
Jeez. Okay. How about you, Nancy? What have you been up to?
Well, I was not watching that, but I was watching something just as scary, which was the Raider game.
It was bad. It's not fun.
No. Okay. But other than that, I'm good.
All right. Well, that's good to hear.
How about you, Tom?
Yeah. I'm getting amped for Thanksgiving. I'm not going to lie. I feel like as you get older, I just feel like you just look forward to a good meal more and more. I don't know. I'm amped for all the food and to reunite with some people. And then also next weekend's my birthday. So that should be
fun. Yeah. Oh,
that's right. That's right. 2 days after Thanksgiving.
Yep. On the 29th. Yeah.
On Saturday, right? So
yes, sir.
Yeah.
So that should be fun.
Question. How do you usually make your turkey? We're frying it, baby. Deep frying. Oh, man. You're a brave man, dude.
We've done it like multiple years. We got it down to a science now. It's real good.
Okay.
There you go.
Highly recommend it if you haven't done it. It's real good.
But don't set your house on fire.
Yes. Please watch videos so you don't make mistakes.
and also, please thaw it out as much as humanly possible, because I think that's what ends up happening. But yeah. What about you, Nancy?
For Thanksgiving, I'm heading back home. I think my mom is now just doing where you like heat it up in the oven, essentially, all the easy ways. Because I'm gonna be honest, none of us help her. It's I drive in like the day of, so nice. I don't really have time to help her. And then my brothers don't cook; they would make things worse. So, yeah, just make it easy.
There you go.
How about you, Andres? What are you doing for Thanksgiving?
We're actually hosting Thanksgiving over at our place, and Jen.
Are you going to be wearing the tiara?
Probably. Maybe I'll wear the tiara. Who knows? But Jen makes the best turkey. So, you know, freaking everyone's more than happy to just be like, oh, yeah, no, Jen gets to make the turkey now. And I'm going to make the. Like, usually I try to help her out with some things here and there and stuff like that. Mostly it's taking care of Brody and making sure everybody is nice and comfy and has hors d'oeuvres. So I'm like handing out the hors d'oeuvres to everybody as we're watching some Thanksgiving pre-programming. But yeah, I got to figure out what we're going to put on the TV on Thanksgiving. It's become a tradition now. Oh no. We don't have football.
Oh no.
This is the Oscar Isaac. No, but no, it's become a tradition now where every time we host Thanksgiving, we always have to pop in the first Spider-Man at some point.
Because of the
Thanksgiving?
Oh,
no,
my light. Whatever. My light went out. It happened. This is what happens when it runs on battery.
Oh,
it's fine.
It's fine. If anything, it just really adds a nice contrast now.
We're all about the contrast.
Yeah, but anyway, diving into today's episode, we got a couple big trailers to talk about. First of which is a teaser trailer, which is for the new Hunger Games movie. That's right. They keep writing the books. They keep making the movies. That's just how it works. And so we have our first teaser for Sunrise on the Reaping, which is a prequel, which follows Woody Harrelson's Haymitch character as a young man, obviously played by a different actor here. So we get to see what his experience during the Hunger Games was like. And we got a bunch of great people in the cast here. And this is our first look at the movie. I know Nancy's a big Hunger Games fan, so I'm going to pivot to you first and foremost. Are you excited for this movie? And did you read the book?
I did not read the book. I still need to get to that. But it's crazy to me. They announced that they were going to do the movie before the book even came out. So they're definitely banking on this regardless, which is a little bit of a red flag. To me, that says like, we don't care how the book turns out. We're going to make the movie anyways. So that does make me a little nervous. Also, it's crazy to me that we're getting a teaser trailer that's 2 minutes long and it's a year before the movie actually comes out. So yeah, that's wild to me. The actual trailer itself, I think it's cool. We're getting a little like Midsommar arena thing going on in there. So that looks really cool. The guy that plays Haymitch looks like he's going to be really good at that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about this one, mostly for the fact that they banked on making this film before the book even came out. So we shall see. Of course, I'm going to see it the like day it comes out anyways, because I love this franchise. But based off of the last one, I don't have too high hopes on this one. So.
Okay. Andres, how about you? Are you excited for this one?
Yeah, honestly, I think The Hunger Games sort of in the same realm as some of the other dystopian novel franchises that have come out over the past couple of years. I think this is still the only one that still feels like it's still clinging on there, but it's one of those where like sometimes, especially with the last movie, it feels like, do we have enough stories to tell? And then the last movie was like, that was a rare case in which I was like, that one I think should have been split in two. And I think it would have been a much stronger movie much stronger story for that. But getting what we're getting now and knowing that Francis Lawrence is directing this version as well too, I will say the trailer didn't necessarily wow me, but I will say that, you know, the cast that's in there, I mean, you know, including Jesse Plemons and a couple other people that are in there, like, it looks like it's got a stacked cast. And so I'm looking forward to see what story they're all going to pull together. And then the other fact is that Haymitch is probably one of the more interesting characters in the entire Hunger Games franchise. So to get an origin story based off of him, I think is going to be interesting. And yeah, it's, and honestly, the other thing too, Elle Fanning is having a great year this year as well too. And her popping up in the trailer, I thought that was great. So it's not much to, sort of have too much an opinion on, but I will say it looks like they're heading in an interesting direction. I'm definitely going to see it opening day as well too, but you know, I think we're going to get more info and more excitement as the other trailers start coming out and start giving us more of the story. I will say I was walking into Walmart today doing some last minute Thanksgiving shopping. And I noticed that the book was already like front and center in the middle of the book aisle. So I know that they were definitely planning on releasing this trailer when the book was ready to go as well too. So yeah, there's a little cross marketing for you, but other than that, you know, I'm curious about it. I'm hopeful about it though.
Yeah, I'm whatever about it. I don't know. I'm not like a huge Hunger Games guy. Like I enjoyed the original movies for what they were. But the last one I found to be incredibly frustrating, where I liked a good majority of it, surprisingly. But then I felt like it kind of fell apart in the last act, which from what I hear from people who read the book also happens in the book, where like the last part of the book is also really like frustrating and rushed. And then this one, I don't know. I just feel like, okay, you know, Haymitch is an interesting character and there might be something there, but it just like, I don't know. I just feel like this franchise is just, I feel like it kind of just feels dated at this point, where it's like that whole, you know, YA craze back in the day where like every YA novel was being adapted into a movie. I just feel like that era is over. And I feel like this is like the last like remaining remnant of that time period. I mean, look, it's nice that Francis Lawrence is back to direct this one. He seems to be their go-to guy and he knows what he's doing, obviously. And I like the, you know, Midsommar visual aesthetic, like Nancy was saying. And I think the cast is incredible here. So that is worth the price of admission alone. But yeah, I mean, for a teaser, I think it does its job, but like, I'm not necessarily super excited to see this one because it just feels like, okay, well, like what other stories can we really tell? You know, like, is this going to be worthwhile to tell his story? Or is it just going to feel like kind of an empty cash grab? So we'll see. I don't know. It's intriguing, but I'm, like I said, I'm not like crazy excited for this one. So that's what I got.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, that's that. So speaking of another sequel that we're that was a prequel. Whatever. jumping to a sequel now. We're talking about the Super Mario Brothers Galaxy movie, which is hitting theaters next year. This is a very highly anticipated sequel. The first one was hugely successful, obviously. Fans loved it. It just, you know, made tons of money at the box office. So naturally, we're getting a sequel here. And, you know, obviously, as someone who wasn't like a huge, you know, not the biggest Nintendo player growing up. I played some of the games, but I'm not like this crazy Super Mario fan. You know, all the Easter eggs that are in this trailer, I did not catch. So, you know, like it's just kind of like watching it from someone else's perspective who grew up on it. Like, you know, I work with a lot of students who love Super Mario Brothers, and like they were just could not stop talking about this trailer. So we got our first look at it here. Definitely got a lot more footage than I thought we were going to get. But what did we think of this first peek at Super Mario Brothers Galaxy? Let's start with you, Andre.
I think in terms of our first peek, this trailer, I think it gets you back into the cast of characters that they established with the last movie. Like, I think Jack Black's Bowser is hands down one of the best aspects of the last movie as well. And just seeing the type of humor that they're still infusing with him, where he's like, huh, I need to get my 8 hours because I'm going to be a monster in a second. I was like, okay, I'm still loving his version of Bowser and his iteration. Still not in love with Chris Pratt's interpretation of Mario because it just sounds so flat. But I will say in terms of the games, Mario Galaxy is probably one of my favorite games in the entire franchise, right next to Super Mario World and a couple of the other ones. And like, it gets me really excited in terms of the visual possibilities with what they can do in this movie. And, you know, you got a little hint of that when they're traveling to the other planets using the Starway. And I thought that was really interesting. I thought that was really cool. And also, I'm just particularly excited about Benny Safdie playing Bowser Jr., which never in a million years did I think that was going to be a thing. But I'm here for it. I'm loving it. And also, I don't understand the massive hate that someone like Brie Larson is getting, especially after the Captain Marvel stuff. You know, I think she's definitely a talented actress, but I really love the fact that she is like a really big Mario fan and that she's cast now as Rosalina. And this, I mean, it just feels like a full circle moment. And I thought it's all great. And honestly, I'm really excited for where they're going to go with this in this movie. But, you know, in terms of the visual aspect, in terms of all the brand new characters they're going to be adding, and the tone and the humor seems just exactly right. So I'm on board. I'm definitely looking forward to this one.
Okay. Nancy, how about you?
Yeah, I love that we have Jack Black come back as Bowser. The, you know, first part of that trailer was pretty funny. I didn't really play the games a lot, just our more original ones. So as far as Easter eggs go and, you know, relaying it to the game, I'm on the same page as you, Tom. It's like, I don't really know too much about it, but right, it looks good. We haven't really gotten too much because it is a teaser trailer, so yeah, there's not too much to go off of, but I am looking forward to this one. I really like the first one, and so I feel like it's keeping the same tone and everything that we had with the first movie. So yeah, looking forward to this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first one was like a big pleasant surprise for me, where I enjoyed it a lot, thought it was a good time at the movies. And so obviously when I heard that they were going to be coming out with another one, I was actually looking forward to it. And I have to say, this one definitely looks bigger in scope. It looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. The voice cast looks game as always. I genuinely thought, like, I think it's because I saw the Jack Black Goosebumps movie. I thought he was just voicing young Bowser and they were just hitting his voice. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised, but it's a nice treat that Benny Safdie's actually voicing that. That's cool. And Brie Larson, I think, is going to be great. And I just think it's got a good sense of humor about itself. I think that it looks like, again, like a great family film. It looks colorful and vibrant and entertaining. And I feel like the sky's the limit for this like franchise. I mean, there's so many games they can draw off of and create sequels and bring in new characters and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, in terms of a teaser trailer, I think it definitely got me excited. I'm looking forward to this movie. I'm just kind of surprised that this movie's coming so fast. I feel like the first one like just came out, so I'm kind of shocked how fast they put this one together. It's pretty damn impressive.
Well, here's the thing, is that the last movie came out in 2023 and it's now the end of 2025, so it feels like no time at all has passed.
Seriously, I mean, they whipped this together fast.
Yeah.
I'm also curious I'm curious how they're going to explain Bowser Jr. I think that's going to be funny within itself. Because the Bowser kids are actually my favorite characters in the franchise. I don't know what it is. Just they have weird names. They're all zany. I love it. So yeah, I think that story is going to be great how they explain it. I'm looking forward to that part of it.
Mm-hmm. I really want to see Waluigi and Wario come in. I'm still waiting.
I'll be willing to bet that they're saving them at least for a post credit at the end of this. Right. And then I always had the big belief that whatever the third movie is, it'll end with at least everything going into a Smash Brothers movie. So who knows?
That'd be cool.
Because, oh, yeah.
And because we better get Yoshi too.
Oh, we're definitely getting Yoshi in this movie. Yeah, so there you go.
I mean, I think I heard a rumbling that like everyone wants Danny DeVito to be Wario. And I'm like, I kind of see it. I'm like, all right.
It's like Charlie, you got a direct line to Danny DeVito. You guys could come in on your days off from Always Sunny and do it.
Who would you cast as Waluigi?
I don't know. It has to be someone who's gangly, though, because man. Waluigi, like tall and gangly.
You know what? Here's the thing. For Waluigi, I'm gonna stick around in the Always Sunny category. I'm gonna say Glenn Howerton would be a great Waluigi.
Okay.
Listen, if anybody has seen Blackberry, his like crazy moments are like, you know, I could easily see that translating into Waluigi.
I don't know. I'm definitely curious to see who they pick to voice these characters. But yeah, I mean, I think it'll be a good time next year. And I think it looks like another great family film that, you know, Nintendo fans will be eating up. But yeah, so we'll see what happens when that hits theaters next year. Exciting stuff. But now we got to move on to the main event of this episode. I mean, Andres isn't wearing a tiara for nothing, folks, even though probably wouldn't even need a reason to wear it. But let's be honest. He loves wearing that thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No,
I went to downtown Boston wearing this tiara as well, too. And the looks I got was fantastic.
Although it was to do in downtown Boston.
Although the funniest thing was I wore the tiara for the beginning half when I was getting concession and stuff like that. And then literally as soon as the movie was over, I was in the bathroom. And then one of the guys that I had seen while I was getting my soda and stuff like that, he just went, "Where's your tiara?" And I was like, "Oh, wow, okay."
It's like, how dare you not commit to the role?
Yeah. I was like, yeah.
That's funny. No, that's great. But yeah, we're talking about Wicked for good, folks. The second and final chapter in the Wicked series here, the two-parter, the epic two-parter, is finally coming to a close here, telling the story of Elphaba and Glinda and their heartbreaking, bittersweet story. So we're going to be talking, you know, spoilers here. So if you haven't seen the movie, you might want to steer clear of the rest of this episode. But if you don't mind being spoiled, or if you've already seen it, definitely tune into the rest of this episode. We're going to be talking about our general thoughts first, and then we're going to be diving into spoiler territory to talk about what we liked, didn't like, thought maybe was just okay, and really dive deep on this one. So let's start with you, Nancy. What were your thoughts on the first movie, and how did you feel about the second?
I was actually pleasantly surprised with the first movie. I had never seen the play, never read the book, so I was very unfamiliar with the source material. I think the songs were really good. It wasn't as life-changing as everyone made it out to be for me, but it was still really good. And I have to say, unfortunately, this one fell flat for me. It just seemed like pacing was really off. It somehow felt like it was going very fast and slow at the same time. I think what they may have done was try to cater to all the hardcore theater kids. And it seemed like they were very focused on the music and not so much the plot, because all the plot stuff seemed like it was going super fast. And all the songs in it were all slow ballads. And so for me, even if the songs were good, it just seemed to like really drag the movie down. There were still some good spots, I would say, in it, but because it was like that, I feel like I'm thinking back on the movie and not really even remembering a lot of what happened in terms of acting wise. And again, to me, Ariana Grande steals this movie. I think she is the best one in it. The last one, I think she was also my favorite part of the whole movie. So I'm glad that she carried that through, but it just seemed like a lot of the acting was just kind of phoned in. It just wasn't, I don't know. This just movie really, really fell flat for me. So yeah, it did not meet my expectations whatsoever.
Damn. How about you, Andres? Where are you on this one?
All right. Yeah. The first one, again, I'm in the same wheelhouse as Nancy, where I did not have any previous exposure to the book or to the play. And probably my only exposure to this franchise or this so-called franchise altogether is really The Wizard of Oz and, you know, The Wiz, and also the return, not the Return of Oz, but the Oz the Great and Powerful prequel that came out with Sam Raimi directing. So that's
literally Oz is good, though. That movie is wild.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet. So yeah, that's definitely going to be on my list.
Yes, that movie is weird as all hell, but it's so good. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so I have not really had that much exposure to this franchise. And that first movie to me was such a big surprise in terms of how much they got me to really care about all these characters and how much they really got me to really, really invest in something that I wasn't really prepared to really be invested in. And then the other thing too, is I went to go see it at an 8:45 showing last year because of the fact that all the tickets were sold out. And even still going to a theater that early in the morning, I was still very invested in the movie. So that's actually a big feat.
8:45 a.m. Oh, okay. I thought you meant night. I was like, oh my gosh.
Oh no, no, no.
That movie's almost 3 hours long.
Yeah, no, 8:45 in the morning. That's like, that is one of those things where the theater is like, people want to come see this. And even still, when we arrived, it was still a packed house. That is literally insane. So I was really looking forward to this sequel as well, too. And the curious thing about this movie is that it has to function as two separate entities. It has to function as a sequel to the last film and a prequel to The Wizard of Oz, and have them meet together. So that was kind of something that really intrigued me in terms of going into this version. I will say this one, I as not necessarily as disappointed as Nancy was with it, I kind of felt that this one had a really tough hill to climb because of the fact that Defying Gravity is the big high watermark of this series and of this franchise. And I feel that none of the songs in the second half didn't come anywhere close to the emotion that I was feeling at that point. And I kind of felt that the movie decided to elongate certain things that didn't need to be elongated. And the thing is that if you look at the runtime for the actual play, it's not more than 2 hours and 45. And the split point that they decided to do for the two movies was at the point where there's maybe about an hour or 45 minutes left of the actual play. So taking that third act and elongating it for nearly 2.5 hours, I kind of felt was a very strange choice. And also elongating some of the things in the original movie, I kind of felt was a little weird. So I think overall, the second movie is not nearly as strong as the first, but it does have enough surprises for anybody that is unfamiliar with the franchise or unfamiliar with the play. And if you're a fan of The Wizard of Oz as well, too, I think some of the ways that they tie certain things into the actual Wizard of Oz was actually great and enjoyable. And personally for me, I had a good time, but is it as good as the original? I don't think so. I think they kind of shot themselves in the foot with where they decided to split the two movies at. And I think the second half is ultimately a little weaker than the first.
So, yeah, I'm definitely in the same boat as you guys in terms of like what I thought about the first film. Huge pleasant surprise for me. You know, I barely remembered the Broadway show because I saw it back in like sixth grade. So really all I remember was Defying Gravity. I didn't remember like anything else about the play. So it kind of felt like I was watching it with fresh eyes and really enjoyed it. I mean, Ariana Grande, Cynthia Erivo, just incredible. And I just loved how grand and epic in scope it was. And it just kind of really immersed me and I got really invested in the story. And so, yeah, I was really excited for this one, even though from what a lot of fans of the show have said, you know, the second half is definitely the weaker part and definitely has a polarizing effect on a lot of people who have seen the show. And I definitely feel like it's not as strong as the first film for sure, but I definitely enjoyed it, I think, a lot more than you guys did. I feel like I did enjoy the music. I really enjoyed the performances. I liked how, like, it definitely felt a little bit more epic in terms of where it was going, in terms of the pacing and kind of just the scale of the story. It just felt more action-packed and just a little bit more intense, which I enjoyed. It definitely had a darker aesthetic and a darker tone to it, which I actually enjoyed. It was a nice change of pace from the first film. But I do feel like the pacing is the biggest problem I have with this film, where it just feels like Nancy said, it feels long, but it also feels like it's going so fast at the same time in terms of the plot and the characters and getting them to where they need to be and then trying to tie it into the Wizard of Oz and everything. And frankly, I feel like anytime it tries to reference the Wizard of Oz or include those characters or connect to that story, I feel like that's when this movie is the least compelling. I feel like that's when I feel like, okay, I don't need those elements in order to enjoy this movie, because I feel like these characters and the story is so good on its own that you don't need the Wizard of Oz elements. I know fans might love that, but you know, even though it's twisted a little bit here, where obviously there's some things that have remained the same and some things that have seriously changed because it's this particular and signature story. But I just felt like I was never really all that interested anytime I tried to reference those characters or include them in the story. I enjoyed watching Elphaba and Glinda and their respective stories a lot more. And I think Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo are fantastic again. They're somehow, in my mind, even better here. I just feel like any time they share the screen together, it's heartbreaking, it's intense, it's beautiful. I think they're delivering fantastic performances. And I feel like this time around, I feel like John M. Chu, I felt like his direction was stronger, honestly, this time around, at least in terms of like the set pieces and the musical numbers. I felt like they had more flair to them and panache. I felt like in the first one, there was kind of like a lack of like visual style to them. It felt a little bland here and there in terms of some of the musical sequences. And I felt like he had more fun this time around, ironically enough, even though the story's darker. So I enjoyed that. I appreciated that. But yeah, I just think, all in all, though, the biggest problem this movie has is it's trying to tell its story way too fast. And I feel like, I don't know, I just feel like Andre said, it kind of shoots itself in the foot with that. I kind of just felt like this should have just been one movie.
Yes.
Ultimately, mm-hmm. I feel like if you made this like 3.5 hours, perfect. You know, you can tell the whole story and you don't need, you know, another movie to drag out 45 minutes to an hour of a show into 2.5 hours. And I think a lot of people would have seen that. I mean, Avatar is like, you know, 3 hours plus, you know, people see that, you know, it makes billions of dollars. So yeah. I feel like they could have easily done that without the fans are invested. It would have absolutely done fine. But yeah, so that's how I feel about this one before we talk spoilers.
Yeah, and I agree with you that they should have at least just made it one movie. And, you know, oddly enough, it's one of those things that's so tough to explain to Universal, where it's like, do you want to make $1 billion or do you want to make $2 billion with two movies? And it's like I see the monetary reason why to split it. But also at the same time, it's one of those things where I think there are certain threads that get left out in this particular movie that could lead to a third movie. And I know the director and the writers have certainly talked about making a Wicked Part 3. So
please,
you
no.
know, I know.
No, like, just we leave it alone.
Yeah. And I think too, if they had maybe addressed or gotten to the Wizard of Oz parts in like one scene, or they, because I think what the problem was that it kept splashing into the movie and it felt like it was taking me out of it. Like, okay, now we have the Cowardly Lion, and then like 30 minutes, now we have the Scarecrow, and 30 minutes later, now we have this. And I think if we just hadn't kept going back to it and, you know, incorporated it in a different way, I think it would have been a little bit better. And it, because it felt so fast, it felt like the emotional side of those parts were taken out because we had to like move on so quickly. In particular, going into spoilers, I mean, not really spoilers if you've seen The Wizard of Oz, but when the house lands on her sister, I kind of forgot about that. And when it started going into like her sister, oh yeah, her sister's wearing the slippers and blah, blah, I was like, oh shoot, the house does kill her. I was like, oh no. But it just seemed like, it's like her sister, who she's very close with, and you know, they have this difficult relationship, dies, and then she kind of just moves on in a good like 10 seconds. And almost Ariana Grande, her character seemed more upset about it than Elphaba, which was really weird. And then they get into this cat fight over a boy. And I was like, what is happening? Like, as funny as that scene was, like, I really did like it. But at the same time, like, what are we doing here? Like, we're having them cat fight over a boy when her sister just died being crushed by a house. And we spent like 5 seconds on that. So yeah, that, I don't know. That was just felt really off to me.
And the fact is that they don't harp in on it too much where, you know, Glinda does let Dorothy walk away with her dead sister's shoes. Mm-hmm. I would have wanted to maybe see that scene maybe told in another context and sort of just have that be like, oh, that's Glinda also just trying to be a people pleaser all over again. And, you know, it's like, oh, you're trying to please somebody that this tragic thing had just happened to one of your best friends, and your first thought was let her walk away with your dead sister's shoes. That is kind of fucked up. But also, anytime I've had this argument with anybody, it always feels like, but Elphaba stole her man. It was like, really? Was it really her man to begin with? Because
he was never really into her.
Yeah,
no,
never at all into her. And it was like, the moment that, like, there's so many moments that I just, like, my mouth was dropping on the floor, and like Jen at one point was like, okay, you need to calm down, and I was like, okay, but are you hearing this right now, where all of a sudden, you know, Glinda just goes, oh, and by the way, we're getting married, and then he has a look on his face like, what?
Like, oh yes, the surprise engagement to him who was engaged. I was like, oh yeah, great, good to know we're engaged now.
Yeah, good to know. We're engaged now. The second I see Elphaba, I'm running. I'm like, you know what? I know they tried so hard to get me on Glinda's side throughout most of the movie. And despite, I think Ariana Grande is really strong in the performance and in the singing aspect and giving us a little more dimension to her character as well, too. I thought she's fantastic. But still, at the end of the day, I don't like Glinda.
I think she's definitely a people pleaser. Okay. I think that's the point, is, you know, she's playing into the politics of Oz.
Oh yeah. And even to a certain extent, like, even oh my god, what's her name? Michelle Yeoh's character. It was like, listen, just do what you do best, smile and shut up. I was like, oh my god, that is some brutal shit right there. But honestly, at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, when you see everything that has gone forward, and I did like the flashback scene where they do explain that, you know what, she's always wanted to be this magical being, but she was never that, and so the only thing she could physically resort to is literally being that people pleaser and just telling people what they wanted to hear. And I was like, okay, you gave me a little more dimension into this character, but at a certain point I'm just like, man, you see that all these people are like literally hunting down your best friend, and you are still surprised why your man ran off with her? Like, come on.
Yep. Now, I feel like I appreciate the fact, and I think this is a testament to Grande's performance, is that in this movie, she gets everything she could have possibly wanted, but you could tell it's not the way she wanted to get those things. And so she can't really enjoy it because, like, she doesn't have her best friend. You know, I think even deep down, I think she knows that Fiero's not really into her and that, like, he's kind of just playing a part like she is. And I just feel like she's trying to put on this brave face and, you know, have this facade that she's happy and that she's this people pleaser and, you know, that she's this woman of the people, when deep down she's just like heartbroken and unhappy. And I feel like she does a great job demonstrating that. So I feel like she gave it a lot of dimensionality that wasn't necessarily on the page, but I feel like you saw it constantly. Like, I never felt like she was really like enjoying herself the way she wanted to. I think she was trying to convince herself she was happy in order to be okay with how things are. But I feel like she never quite was, especially when she, you know, has her scenes with Elphaba where, like, it really, that face just drops and you see how she really feels. So I really appreciated that. And like that scene of, you know, that flashback scene of her as a kid, I thought that was a great way of also fleshing out just kind of like what's informed the person she is now and like why she has taken on this role of Glinda. I think it was really effective. So I appreciated that.
Yeah. And that's a very weird thing with what the movie decides to add and what it decides to take away as well. Like, that scene in particular, I thought was really great because that's not in the play, that flashback. But the other things that they decided to add, like Elphaba's song and her bubble song, I thought the bubble song was not bad as well too, but I kind of felt like they just more elongated or extended the runtime as opposed to really adding more dimensionality to the character. But yeah, I mean, like, I like that. That's the thing that ultimately I think some of the additions were a little uneven at certain points. And I, like, you know, as we were talking earlier, like, you know, I think it would have been stronger as one movie as opposed to two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, speaking of Rushed, let's talk about the Tin Man, shall we?
Oh my God.
You know, the thing is, it clicked for me what I like when that happened. I was like, oh, I remember the play now. I was just like, oh, okay. Now I remember why people were like polarized on. I was like, oh, right. The twist on the, okay, got it. And I was like, yeah, I didn't like that. No, I just felt like if they actually gave that storyline the time it needed to really develop, because in the first film, you see them like meet each other and like slowly fall in love with one another and they're all happy, and this one all of a sudden now he's just immediately unhappy and wants to be with Glinda, and then mm-hmm. they have their falling out, and then, you know, inadvertently he gets turned into the freaking Tin Man. And like, I feel like if that actually like was fleshed out and given time to breathe, that would have been like heartbreaking and would have been effective. But the fact that they like just kind of sped through it, I just felt like it just didn't work for me.
And it was weird that she was like, I don't know what this does. I was like, okay, why are you reading it then? And then
don't fucking touch it.
Yeah. it had the multiverse of madness thing where it's like, stop reading from the book, guys. But the other thing too is, see, I had no clue about what certain characters were going to become later on. And like the second that all of a sudden, Nessa starts reading from the book and then he starts going, oh, my heart. I was like, oh, is that the, it just occurred to me right there. And I literally looked at Jen. I was like, is that going to be the Tin Man? And then she was like, yep. I was like,
I mean, they did a great job with like the makeup. Oh my God. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, all the makeup and stuff looked incredible. Yeah. Even though they turned Jonathan Bailey into Ryan Reynolds, but
yes. It was Ryan Reynolds with Botox. Like, oh my God. Like, we were saying that the second that we came out of the theater, it's like, why does he look like Ryan Reynolds?
Wait, which one is that one?
Fiero when he becomes the Scarecrow.
Oh, I liked the makeup that they did. I thought it looked good.
No,
it's good. It's just, yeah.
Okay.
It's just funny. Anytime Elphaba read from the book, it just kind of reminded me of the Cabin in the Woods where like that one character is just like, does anyone think we shouldn't read the Latin?
Yes, exactly. Like, maybe let's stop reading from there.
Yeah, let's stop reading the book.
Yeah. Because nothing good comes from
like,
reading the
book. But I will say, I did appreciate, even though when they were incorporating the Wizard of Oz characters, I did appreciate the fact they didn't like show Dorothy's face or show... like really pay too much attention to those characters, because I heard a rumbling and I was really hoping they wouldn't do it. And thank God they didn't, where like I heard rumbling that Dorothy was going to be like Taylor Swift. And I was like, please fucking God, no.
God.
Yeah. Hell. So I was like dreading them to finally like pan up and it's like Taylor Swift as Dorothy. I was like, please God, no. But I like the fact that they kind of show the audience like, look, this isn't Dorothy's story. Like, we're not going to show her face for a reason. Like, seeing her in shadow, like, I really liked the way they filmed, you know, the final confrontation between Dorothy and the Wicked Witch, like, yeah. like through shadows and like seeing kind of a different perspective. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, and I like that they kind of made Dorothy like this ditzy asshole that's in the like movie, actually, as opposed to like what we see in The Wizard of Oz, because Glinda mm-hmm. keeps kind of referring to her like, ugh, there's always something going on with that silly girl. And in The Wizard of Oz, she actually accidentally hits her with water because I think she's trying to put out the scarecrow. So she doesn't intentionally throw water on her, whereas this one she actually intentionally goes and throws water on her to get, you know, her broom and go back. So I thought that was an interesting change that they did. Also, I'm very glad that they didn't make it that she died from water, because the whole time I was like, why are you, I thought this was a rumor. Why are you actually dying from water? That makes no sense. So when she came back up, I was like, oh, thank God. Okay.
Yeah, like that was the thing that I literally turned to Jen at one point, because Jen has seen the play and I was literally just kind of like, did I miss that she's like allergic to water or something from the last movie? And then it was just like, she was like, no, just keep watching. I was like, all right. Because I was so confused as to like how, because I was confused as to like, why is that even set up in the last movie that she has like an aversion to water or anything like that? And then as it turns out, she really doesn't. And that's just kind of another ploy for Dorothy. But I will say, in terms of one of my favorite Elphaba moments, is when she's shoving Dorothy into the little basement and he's going, shut up and give my sister's shoes back. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, no, I like that. No, that was good. I appreciated that a lot. And I did love the whole like no good deed, the way they handled that song and that whole set piece was really good. Like, honestly, that was the one that came closest to defying gravity for me.
Just
like Erivo's performance, the visual look of it, it just looked fantastic. And I will say this one felt like it even had even more production value just in terms of the scope and just the special effects and everything and just how grand it looked. Like, it just it felt even bigger somehow.
I mean, well, because of the fact that the first movie, for the first two hours out of the 240-minute runtime of the first movie, we're spent a lot at Chiz, and there's kind of not necessarily, like, even though they do show multiple landscapes and multiple locations throughout all the Chiz, it kind of felt like it was very confined, whereas this one, I kind of felt like they had much more of a bigger canvas to explore the world of Oz, and we got to see so many more different facets of the city, and, you know, seeing what Emerald City looks like at night and what the deserts look like as well too. I thought that was all interesting, and I really did dig the how the look of the Yellow Brick Road in terms of the origin of how that comes about as well too. I thought that was particularly well done and something that I thought definitely added more pathos to the world as well.
I'll never get used to that name.
Shiz.
I will say some of the dialogue and the way they like twist words, I hate.
Yes.
It honestly, to me, is like the equivalent of like Pitch Perfect when they're like, "Aka squeeze me."
You know? Yes. Like,
it feels like equally as cringy to me. Where I'm just like, just say the real words. You know, like it's just like it, I don't know. It just always bugs me. I don't know. I never liked it.
Hold the clock tick. So you didn't like that?
Oh my God. If they said that one more fucking time. Hold the clock tick? Like, dear God, come on.
Like, it's like, no, this will not. Yeah, it's like, no, none of this phrasing will catch on, no matter how much you want it. It'll probably catch on with the theater kids, but not with mainstream.
Yeah. Did you guys get the scene with her and her new man when she's like, for the first time I'm feeling wicked? Yeah. Everyone in my theater was all
oh
jeez Louise.
Yeah.
Oh no, we got a big groan in our theater.
Oh really? Oh good.
Yeah. It was like, oh
yeah, I was like oh.
Honestly, I'm kind of glad I didn't have to see this opening weekend, like where like there's gonna be like applause breaks and shit like that. I'm happy I didn't have to do that.
There's many kids in my theater too. It was bizarre. So like they were all loud, they were cheering. We got there was a lot of reactions to those lines. Just like, ugh.
No, I mean, in my screening, I was sitting next to like a massive Wicked fan, and like when the credits rolled, she was like I was like, holy shit. I was like, I need to make a train. So if you could just
yeah.
It's like, that would be moment great. Elsewhere.
Yeah. My God. But
yeah. And the thing is that, I mean, like as much as the movie was a hit and a miss for certain reasons, like that's the thing where it's like, you know what, the theater kids, like, you know, we can let them have this one. This is how we feel. You. Yeah, this was for you. And the thing is that genre has not really been not really portrayed on screen nearly as much as like, you know, comic books or even movies comic books or novels in particular. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like, you know what, this means something to them. So, you know, they can have it, I will say the other thing too, is that, because of the fact that we knew that so many screens were going to be taken up by Wicked, that if you go see anything else, and if you go see something that's quieter as well too, you're just going to hear Wicked on the other end. So like me and Jen, we were both like debating about seeing like other movies like Rental Family with Brendan Fraser that we're both really looking forward to. And we're just kind of like, yeah, if we go see that, we're just going to hear Wicked on the other end. So we're just like, you know what? We're going to wait until it dies down just a little bit, and then we're going to go back to the movies. But yeah, it's one of those things where sometimes it can get bombastic. And also depending on what audience you see it with, like, the one thing that we kind of had to deal with the 8 a.m. screening as well, too, was people singing along as well. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Okay. Mm-hmm. We get it. We get it. This is your thing. But yeah.
I don't think you let the people know that your screening froze.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's oh, my God. No. It froze. Okay. So here's the thing. It froze once and then they started it back up. And then about 5 minutes later, it froze again. Mm-hmm. And that was the point where I texted everybody on the group thread. Hey, guys, we might have to delay film on tap because the movie is not starting at all. And like,
well, surprise, we had to delay it anyways.
Oh, yeah, we had to delay it anyway still. But it wasn't because of the technical issue. But like, at one point, it kind of felt like, man, is the movie going to start up? Because we were waiting there for like about a half hour before it started back up again. And we were afraid that the second they were going to start it back up, it was just going to be a little further on down the line. Because here's the thing is that theater was booked solid for all Wicked screenings. And you know, thankfully enough, when the movie got started up again, they actually started it back at least 5 minutes previous from where it was. So we got to actually still see everything leading up to it. But the
God
second
bless digital projection, people.
Yeah. But the second the movie was over, like I just saw all the ushers literally just sweeping popcorn buckets underneath the seats because I don't think they had time to clean up the entire theater before the next showing. They were just like sweep it under and just let everyone in like 2 minutes. I was like, yeah. So yeah,
it was that next showing.
Yeah. But you know what? They're going to be too busy paying attention to the movie. So it's fine. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought the theater was going to riot the second that it froze on Elphaba's first new song. And then you just heard boo. And I was like, yikes. I don't want to be any of those ushers.
No, dude, you don't understand. Opening like, day. You think that was bad, but literally unlike the opening night screening of Avengers Endgame, it froze halfway through the movie.
Ooh, no.
And they couldn't fix it. And so they gave us refunds. They're like, you can come back and see for free. I'm like, it's booked solid for the rest of the weekend, buddy. Like none of us can see it.
No.
So literally like, they're literally, you know, the scene like where they're about to go back in time, they're all suited up. It literally like, it almost felt like a transition where like you get that bright flash of white light and then the screen just stayed black and we're like,
oh no.
And we're like, is this
shit.
Part of the movie? Dude, the amount of people who were, I saw people like throwing their popcorn in the parking lot, people were screaming, like it was like bad.
Yeah, that's a bad one to freeze on. Whew.
Yeah, so, like of all movies.
How far did you have to wait to like watch it?
No, I literally was able to at a local theater that doesn't even exist anymore. I was able to see it like the next morning. I was able to get a couple of tickets and I got to see it there. Like wasn't as like good, obviously, as seeing it like on a bigger theater and like a big chain or whatever. But I was like, at least I got to see the fucking movie opening weekend. Yeah. So,
but man, that is such a frustrating experience, though. It's one of those things where essentially, you know, everything that has been leading up to that movie as well too, and also the anticipation that was behind that, it like that's tough, man. That's,
you know,
tough.
What? Knock on wood, that's never happened to me ever in the theater. So let's keep that streak going.
Well, at least now with digital projection, like they can actually like go back and like restart it. Like film, forget about it. Like that's over. Mm-hmm. You know, like
well, that's one of the reasons why Sinners and a whole bunch of the one battle after another IMAX screenings and 70mm, like people just keep going like, what's going on? Like sometimes it just glitches and they have to start the movie up again and all this other stuff happens. It's like, yeah, with film sometimes you do get those technical difficulties here and there, but you know, is it really worth it to get the flicker effect when you're watching the movie? Who knows?
But anyway, back to Wicked.
Anyways.
Back to Wicked. Thank you for hearing our PSA about digital projections versus film.
Something also I wanted to touch on. How did we feel about the wizard in this movie?
We did not. We did not feel him. I did.
It seemed like he was drugged out the whole movie.
Yeah, I was iffy about him in the first one anyways. Like, I did enjoy his song. But yeah, it just got worse in this one.
As charming as Jeff Goldblum is, I just kind of felt like his character felt like an afterthought in this movie.
Yeah. Well, even when they like reveal it's their dad and it's like, well, we kind of,
well, they already like confirmed that in the first movie pretty much.
Yeah. So it was weird that we got that. And then he, you know, seems sure, like, oh no, what I have done. And it's like, well, too late now. You know, it just felt like there's not much we can do with this information now. So why even put it in that he's, yeah, that it's revealed to him. And yeah, he just felt out of place, like, to begin with. So yeah, it just got worse in this one.
Yeah. And the other thing too is that, like, I just love how fast he was. Like, he went from 0 to 60 so many times in this movie where he's like, oh, deal. We are going to work together, all three of us, and we're all going to, I'm going to let the animals out and stuff like that. And then literally not even 5 minutes later, all of a sudden he's like, now hold on, Elphaba. We can let out all the other creatures, but we can't let out these ones that are chained up downstairs in my basement. And it's like, oh God, there's just no winning with this guy whatsoever. And he's like, you know, so like, I think they do a great job in terms of showing that he is the polar opposite version of Glenda, where he's willing to tell people as many lies as humanly possible just so that they can have that sort of calmness and that peace in their life. But he's doing it for so many reasons. He's doing it for other reasons that Glenda wouldn't do it. Like, Glenda is doing it because she legitimately cares about people, whereas he just really just wants the easy way out for himself. So I thought that was a really great way of showing the juxtaposition between those two characters in terms of what they do and how they attain certain powers in the movie. So yeah, but apart from that, I don't know. I thought Goldblum was a little bit of a misfire at points too, even though, again, like we said, his number was enjoyable, but it's like, I think we need more time with that character and less time on some of the other elements that they decided to spend time on in this movie.
But see, like, yeah. The thing is like, I know we've been harping on it a lot, but like, I still came away, like, I feel like I enjoyed it a lot still. Like, I definitely have my problems with this movie, but I'm still very entertained, really liked the performances. I still was emotionally invested in Elphaba and Glinda's story. Like, I really felt like they did their story justice. And like, ultimately, I felt satisfied at the end of it. I think I do have to give credit to, you know, John M. Chu and, you know, the whole team here, that like, both of these movies, I think, can be enjoyed on their own. I don't feel like they necessarily need each other in order to be enjoyed. Like, obviously, watching them back to back, I think, might be a more cohesive experience and might feel a little bit more satisfying. But like, I never felt like, oh, you definitely need to watch the first one in order to like just enjoy this one on its own. Because I felt like both of these films, they felt enjoyable in their own right. They definitely feel different from one another. So I have to give them kudos for that, because a lot of these part one, part twos just feel like you kind of need one to have the other or to enjoy it. Like, you know, like a good example of that is like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, like part one and part two. Part one really does feel like a part one, where it's like you might as well have just made it like just one movie in order to like give it that satisfaction. But this one I felt satisfied with both. But obviously I do think the first installment's stronger. But I still enjoyed this one a lot. I have my issues, but you know, I still walked away having, you know, a really good time with this one.
Yeah, in fact, I think the closure point that they should have done with the first movie, because here's the thing, is that there's certain movies out there, like you said. I mean, I think Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows Part 1 and Part 2, I think they did it really well in terms of the fact that this is a two-parter and this is not a complete story, but the audience was willing to buy that. The audience was willing to go for it because of the fact that there's, especially when you look at how dense that seventh book is and how much catch up they need to do because of the fact that they omitted certain things and certain characters from the other movies that were pivotal in part seven, that they're like, okay, well, we need to extend this because we have a lot of catch up to do. Whereas I think if you follow the template of something like Doom Part 1 and Doom Part 2, I think that's about as good as a two-parter that we've gotten recently, because of the fact that, you know, you look at Doom Part 1, and while it's really great, I think there's not necessarily as many memorable moments as Doom Part 2 does, as Doom Part 2 has. I mean, because of the fact that in the same way with Wicked in particular, I think the point that they should have split it was the second that they were going on the train to go see the wizard. Granted, it might have been a little less of a satisfying first movie, but at the same time, it's a great startup and it's a great lead up to everything else. And I think you still could have gotten an audience really, really excited to see what Defying Gravity would have been in the second half and how this deal with the wizard really comes into play. Because I think the second they get to Emerald City, that to me feels like part one. That feels like to me like act one of two and three in this whole saga that ends up happening later on the second half. So honestly, that's sort of my opinion in terms of where they should have split the two movies, but you know, that's just my opinion.
I mean, I think it's always difficult. You want to make sure the part one isn't just all lead up to part two, because then, you know, just doesn't feel like an entertaining movie. But you also don't want to feel like part two is just tacked on there. And, you know, circling back to Hunger Games, you know, that the third and fourth movie, the third one felt like all lead up to the fourth one. And it just was not very entertaining. So I think that probably is where they're coming from. But I agree. I think splitting it there would have made it where you have enough where it wouldn't feel just like lead up, and then you have some left over for part two where it's not, you're not rushing things and you still have that Defying Gravity moment in there.
Yeah, just momentum in the story, but you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, but overall though, what would you say your overall rating for this movie would be? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first so we can go up from there. I'm going to give it a tentative 2.5 pints.
Ooh, tentative. She says tentative, folks.
Tentative. I'm willing to rewatch it and go see it again. Granted, it was late and I was not in the best mindset going into this movie. So I'll give it another shot. But yeah, I just think it really... I didn't walk away from it holding on to as many moments as I did as the first one. And I feel like, again, because all the songs were ballads, it just felt like it was dragging the movie along. And I wasn't getting those same character moments that I did in the first one. And again, in the first one, I felt like Ariana Grande and their relationship and, you know, figuring out with Elphaba and their friendship was the highlight of the movie. You know, sorry, animals. It wasn't quite you that got me invested in this movie, albeit a good lesson. But yeah, so I think I will give it a 2.5 pints.
2.5, Andres?
Yeah, for me overall, even though there was so many shortcomings with the second half, but I still think that the first half is so strong in itself that it doesn't diminish the story and it doesn't diminish everything that it tried to do for the second half in terms of giving us a worthwhile conclusion. The performances from Cynthia Erivo and freaking Ariana Grande are fantastic in this as well. And again, I agree with you, John Chu's direction as well too is very strong in the second half, and I feel like he got more to play with in terms of the locales in Oz and the locales in Emerald City. So I think it was stronger in certain elements, but I think the place that he struggles with a lot, especially if you look at some of his other movies, he struggles with story and he struggles with what is most important to keep in the movie in terms of keeping your story and keeping your momentum versus small moments that you love that don't necessarily add to the story in particular. So overall, I think the first one, I gave a 4.5 out of 5. I really enjoyed that first movie. This second half, I would say it's a 3 pints out of 5 for me. It's very enjoyable, but it is very flawed and it does drag at certain points, but all the positives that are there certainly bring this up a little more. And it's definitely very ambitious in what it's trying to do. But I think with that ambition, there are certain misses as a whole. But overall, combining the two movies and seeing this as its own thing, it still holds up. So I still enjoyed my time with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's as strong as part one, but I still really enjoyed this one. I think I gave the first one like 4.5, I believe. So I'm giving this one a 4. I have my problems with it, but I really was entertained throughout. I had a good time with it. I really enjoyed being in this world again and seeing these performances and seeing these characters again. And I just feel like, you know, it was a good part one and a good part two for me. I do think part two had its fair share of its issues, and I feel like there's better ways it could have stuck the landing. But I think ultimately we got to a place where I was still emotionally satisfied. And that for me was the most important factor here. I wanted to feel that closure, that bittersweet closure, and really just kind of feel like the conclusion of the story was satisfying in a way that didn't make me feel like I wanted more. And I feel like this movie accomplished that even despite its flaws. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 pints. But enough of us talking about Wicked. Let us know in the comments what you think of Wicked for Good if you've checked it out. Let us know. And also let us know what you thought about the trailers for Super Mario Brothers Galaxy and Sunrise on the Reaping. Let us know in the comments below. And before we head on out, one when? Where can the fine people find you guys on the interwebs? Let's start with you, Andre, since should we get the scroll out at this point?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get the scroll. All right. So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Galagos. You can also find me on Letterboxd as Galagos. You can also find me on YouTube as Galagos as well, too. And you can also find me editing for our mutual buddy, David Jindoyan's Cinemojis, which is going to be coming back as its own channel. Hooray on that. And also, you can find me on the Extra Butter podcast this week as well, too, where we talk about The Running Man. Last week, I talked about Predator Badlands, so go check out both of those episodes. Really enjoyed talking to those guys as well. And you can also find me editing a couple of things for the High Voltage Media channel on YouTube as well. And you can also find me editing some stuff for Film Speak as well. I just edited a really good Predator Badlands retrospective or review as well, so go check that out as well, guys. And you can also find me here.
That is correct. As Tom is texting or frozen.
I'm sorry. What?
Oh, sorry. God.
Is it done?
Is
he finished?
Okay, is he finished? Great. You know what? All right. About you go next?
No. Nancy, we're going to find
Yes, you can find me at PL_Band-Aid on Twitter and Instagram. And you can find me here in the comments. That's all.
Look at that. Look at that. And you guys could find me on Twitter and Instagram.
You froze.
Damn.
You froze.
I don't know. I still see myself moving. All right. Well, you guys can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Tom Chattelbash, Facebook and YouTube. Well, you can find me on Facebook at Chattelbash Reviews, YouTube, Tom Chattelbash. And then you can also find me on Letterboxd at T Chattelbash, if that's your thing. And thank you guys for tuning into another brand new episode of Film on Tap. We hope you enjoyed it, whether you watched it or you listened to it. We appreciate you tuning on in. And thank you for watching Film on Tap, where we've got the tap that never runs out. Take care, guys.
Bye.
See ya.